Hello, the internet, and welcome to the Daily Zeitgeist for Friday, October 13th, 2017. Happy Death Day, you guys. I think that's the name of the movie that's coming out today. Spooky day, and my name's Jack O'Brien, and I am happy to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Yes, I am also named Jack O'Brien. Jack O'Brien. Well, I fucked that up. Way to start this one.
All right, and we're thrilled to be joined in our third seat by Lacey Mosley.
Hey.
Ooh, you do your own.
I do my own sound
dance hall siren.
I need it every time.
Let them know,
Lacey. What's the weirdest thing in your search history from the past week?
The weirdest thing in my search history from the past week is rapper Dark Butts.
Okay. And we don't want any context from that, actually.
Nope.
We're just going to go right into your overrated, underrated.
Okay, cool. Google rapper Dark Butts and maybe you'll understand me. underrated, I have... okay, this makes me feel so bad to even say this, but I feel like the Cash Me Outside girl as a rapper, Bad Baby.
Wait, there's...
Is underrated.
You said underrated?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. No.
I'm sorry. She's got some fire songs. They're hitting.
Hi, bitch.
Like, I literally made everyone on my team come out to that on Herald Night. We play that on Herald Night at UCB.
I'm not going to lie. I did use that in an Instagram caption recently. But, yo, she's fucking problematic. As fuck,
but you know, who isn't these days?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Can you explain who the Cash Me Outside girl is our white audience?
I do not know her name in real life. It's Danielle.
Brigoli. Danielle, yeah. Brigoli.
There we
get
go.
It right.
Danielle Brigoli. She appeared on Dr. Phil, where she got into a very heated discussion with him over her lascivious activities as a youth and told him that she needed to cash him out. She could cash him outside. How about that?
Well, no, it was the audience.
Right. Well, yeah, the audience members could cash
her
outside.
Cash me outside. How about that?
Yes.
How about that?
Basically meaning come outside and we can fight each other.
Right. Dr. Phil was like, now, what is she saying?
Yeah.
We're like, what does that mean?
And my audience is hoes. It's like, yeah, he's like, oh, they are these hoes. But yeah, and then she got signed to Atlantic, right. Signed a 360 deal with Atlantic. Same, you know, who
Cardi B is also signed
exactly.
to Atlantic.
They have a new model, which is to cash in on like social media celebrities and turn them, give them music careers. But you know what I will say? Maybe she's underrated, but I am surprised that I thought it would just be a total disaster. And the fact that even the things are kind of even like reminiscent of
a good song.
They sound pretty good. Like
they flame.
Some of them aren't that bad.
And you can tell her mom dresses her in those music videos.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they're like, if you're going to do this, you're going to wear a hooded sweatshirt zipped all the way up and jeans. I don't want to keep any thotty outfits.
Right.
I mean, at least they're trying. She's young as hell. And I heard that she's also very extra, which like, you know, like a Mariah Carey fashion. Like one of the firms that I've gone into, she was there and she was getting carried around by a security guard.
What do you mean one of the firms?
Like a social media firm. I was like in like doing some work with them.
Okay.
I can't say who, but she was also in the office and they were carrying her like a baby, like around the office.
That's amazing.
It was like, spectacle. Yes, bitch. Give me spectacle.
My dream has always been to like be in a professional sports league, get injured and then get carried out like a baby by like your teammate.
Wait, and when you say like literally like in their arms
cradling
like a baby, and what
her.
Was her demeanor? Like she's like, that's right. They're
yeah,
holding me like a baby.
this is her bag. Like she was acting like it was not bizarre that she was being carried around this office place.
Okay.
It was fantastic.
Right around on my bodyguard's back, like Prince in the club.
Yep. Blackish, I feel like is hella underrated. It is fantastic, and it's only getting better on television. Fill that Cosby void. Oh, that's a weird phrase. Just you know, you can watch that instead. Selena Gomez's best friend gave her a kidney, and I feel like this did not get enough press.
Also,
I thought it did.
Really? I didn't.
I mean, I'm surprised I knew about it before you, because you were like, what happened?
I'm
like,
didn't.
What have you been?
And I was just like, damn, it really made me think, like, are my best friends drinking enough water? You know?
Yeah. You're looking at your friends like, oh, no, no, no. I would not fuck with their kidney
right?
At
Do
all.
We have the same blood type? Like, I'm going to get my friends together because
just
I will be
text?
Famous enough that I'm like, look, y'all, who trying to throw me that liver?
Yeah.
All right. What's overrated?
Overrated is TV reboots. I am so tired of Hollywood just being so desperate not to become a diverse place that they're just going to resurrect any old television show from whenever, like Fuller House, Will and Grace, which actually killed in the ratings when it debuted.
Which one did?
Will and Grace.
Oh, it did?
It had like a 3.
Hey, I watched Fuller House, so, you know, don't come for my Fuller
no
House.
No thanks. No thanks
it's
to those.
So, woo, it's plenty, so bad. It's amazing.
There's
it's
plenty of amazing scripts out here. I just feel like it's fucking lazy to be digging up the graves of these old shows. Like,
that's true. It is. Like, all these shows are from a time when diversity was considered, like, having
one black. It red. Still is. I love how people have masqueraded, like, TV is just, like, black as fuck and Latino as hell
right.
and, like, Asian is,
yeah.
you know what
oh,
I mean? It's
there's
not.
Like a couple
there's one
show,
show
yeah,
two shows.
Have, right.
Fuller House is diverse because Kimmy Gibbler has short hair. And the other
oh, yeah. And, and she has a half Latin child.
Oh, nice.
So,
nice. There you go.
But even though the father of that child is mad problematic anyway. But hey, that's a whole other.
I mean, ooh. What you gonna do?
It's Fuller House.
So it is Friday the 13th. Just wanted to fill people in on, so apparently this day loses the American economy as much as $900 million.
What?
Every time it rolls around because people stay home or don't go on vacations or this is one of those statistics that first of all, it says as much as in front of it.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, who knows? And as little as $1,
but nearly a billion. Oh, who knows?
Yeah. But it's also one of those things that, like Ouija boards, for instance, go back to, I think, you know, maybe 50 years ago when, a board game company invented Ouija boards. They're not like an ancient thing. And Friday the 13th, similarly, only goes back to 1907 to a novel where, and it was like a financial thriller that basically like told the story of a guy, a businessman who plots to crash the stock market. And that was like the first mention in history of Friday the 13th.
Hmm.
There's
really?
Supposedly like all these myths about it going back to the 13th century and when like a bunch of Knights Templar were arrested and tortured. And nope, goes back to the early 20th century and to a financial thriller.
But we lost some money.
The one of these things that I do believe in is full moons. I do think, like, I've talked to too many people who, like, work in institutions and, you know, have worked in mental hospitals where right. they're just like, no, it is definitely true that every full moon, like, people just go bonkers. They use that word, bonkers.
who work in mental
yeah. It's bonkers!
To use
in
a
here.
Scientific term, they go fucking bonkers.
All right, Miles. So, our first story is sort of a it's not really defining the zeitgeist type thing.
No, but in a way, it demonstrates
how the zeitgeist
on. Yeah,
works.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's see. Last Friday on October 6th, a week ago, this man, Michael Estes, went to the, like, the Asheville Regional Airport and like just around like before 1 a.m., dressed in all black. He had a bag with him. They show him walk in the airport with a bag, and then suddenly in the footage, he leaves the airport without a bag. So cut to, the alarms go off. People are being like, there's a suspicious package. They look inside. Lo and behold, there is an IED in there. Like, he's made a homemade bomb out of ammonia nitrate and with, like, some shrapnel and a timer for the bomb to go off, like, in the morning, essentially. So this man basically left a bomb at an airport. And, you know, guess what the coverage was like on that. First.
Well, Miles, I'd imagine it was all over the news and just nonstop 24-hour coverage on CNN and Fox News.
No.
Fox News loves terrorist attacks. They probably covered it like round the clock, right?
No. Barely any coverage. Oh, but I left out a very important detail. The suspect was actually white and a man.
Even though they are our most dangerous type of person statistically in America. They didn't cover it.
Oh, look at you, Jack, with the woke statistics. I like you. Thank you. Yes, there was a white man, a possible terrorist, although Trump would never say that, leaving a bomb at an airport. And yeah, this was like a very underreported incident. I mean, it took other news outlets days for like actual legitimate coverage for this to come out. Fox News did report about it, but that was just when it was a person of interest sought after device found at airport kind of situation. But then once the suspect was identified as this man, Michael Estes, there was not even a hint of coverage on that website.
So Fox covered it like when it was just an anonymous bomb, and then when they identified like, okay, and this is who we're looking for, they stopped covering it?
Basically, like it was almost like, oh, there's a bomb at the airport, here we go, maybe it'll turn up traditional terrorists. And then when it was like, oh, reveal, it's a white man, it's like, I don't know shit about that. And so it sort of, you know, got us thinking. Obviously there we see a bias, especially in like on conservative media about these things like that, but also there was a story about a black man who made a threat to, quote, do another Vegas because he felt cheated by a mobile app developer.
What?
And that story blew up. And what, Jack, you looked into sort of like...
Yeah, I just did a search of the guy's name who threatened to do another Vegas at... I'm going to do another Vegas at you to this mobile phone company. I think he was in New York. The mobile phone company was in, or the app developer was in Colorado. And when you search his name, in quotes, his full name, you get 70,000 results. When you search Michael Estes's name, you get 35,000. So twice as many results for a guy who threatened to do another Vegas.
To a mobile phone company, but a white man who leaves a legitimate bomb in an airport, half that. So, right. Yeah. So again, it fits into this thing, you know, if it doesn't fit the narrative Trump's trying to push, which is, you know, Muslims are terrorists and that's why we need to have a travel ban, that's going to get air. But if it doesn't, then, you know, like he'll gloss over it. Like even when there was that London Bridge attack, he jumped on that to just be like, you know, this is why we need tighter immigration control. And even the Philippines, there was a casino shooting. He labeled that terrorism when it wasn't. So, and then when we look at people or white people actually being perpetrators of some kind of terrorism, Charlottesville, you know, it's glossed over pretty quickly.
Did you see the, well, you probably already talked about the second protest that they had where everyone looked like way more attractive.
We talked about the Edgar, yeah, where Richard Spencer put on his nice suit.
He was trying to look like a fuckboy for the white supremacy movement. But it's interesting to me because I always thought that white people have the privilege of not being a monolith and that, you know, everyone is a lone person and we all get lumped together as minorities. Like if somebody shoots up one thing, we're like, God damn, well, now we all shot it up. like I remember hoping that the DC snipers weren't black because I was like, come on, don't do this
to us.
And then, no, you know,
yeah, Chris Rock had a bit like that in the early 90s where he'd be like, if I read about like a serial killer, he's like, I'm praying in the article it's not black because I don't want to have to go into work tomorrow. And they're going to be like, hey, so did you know Jerome?
Literally, next thing I know, airport security gets a lot more real, got fingers in my butt.
Yeah, so another narrative that seemingly that, you know, again, that Trump loves to push is the one that he is owning ISIS, bombing the shit out of them. They have nowhere to go. And he's, you know, he's going to do away with Islamic terrorism once and for all. And also the America first thing, like we don't need to be meddling in other people's business if it doesn't have any consequence to the U.S. Okay, so cut to Niger on October 4th. There was a group of U.S. troops who were working in conjunction with some Nigerian soldiers in Niger, and they were ambushed, and 4 Green Berets were killed, 2 more soldiers were injured. And again, this was like a pretty significant event. There were loss of U.S. soldiers' lives, which clearly, you know, has been touted as one of the most important things, especially with the NFL protests, that, you know, our soldiers are very important, the sacrifice they give. There were no tweets about this from the White House. No mention that these soldiers had lost their lives, not even from Trump. He hasn't said a thing. There hasn't been a statement out of the White House. And again, because it almost kind of looks like very eerily similar to the same stakes as Benghazi, where you have U.S. soldiers who were put at risk. Apparently, the military forces in Niger have asked for additional resources because it is a very difficult place to operate from a military standpoint, and they weren't getting that support, and there was a lot of speculation that that may have led to the greater loss of life in this instance. But yeah, again, you know, this happened on a Wednesday of last week. You didn't hear anything from Trump. He was too busy sending Mike Pence to go do his, you know, paid protest at the Colts game. You know, Trump, who loved this.
Pence was a paid protest.
Yeah. Then you have Trump couldn't even be bothered. He didn't even go to Dover Air Force Base to greet the coffins of these soldiers who came home, you know, because, you know, instead he wanted to play golf with Lindsey Graham. So normally Obama had been dragged for this kind of stuff. Hillary Clinton was dragged for the shit that's going on in Benghazi. And the lack of outrage on the right, I think, just goes to show that Benghazi has never about embassy security. And just similar to the same thing of like how Ivanka's private email use, it was never about that. It's all just sort of whatever fits the narrative and scores political points. So, you know, we'll see if Trump says anything about this. It doesn't seem like he will because it doesn't fit his I'm doing a great job. I'm owning the terrorists. I'm, you know, putting America first. The troops are great. It doesn't tick any of those boxes. So,
yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. And we're back. So we wanted to talk about the tech industry and sort of how it operates, how it ties into, you know, some of the news stories you're seeing recently about Russia, because I guess these companies are more powerful than I realized, definitely more powerful than the Hillary Clinton campaign realized, because Facebook went to both campaigns and was like, hey, we can help you with targeted advertising. And the Trump campaign took them up on that. And the Clinton campaign was like, nah, we're good. And that was a pretty fateful decision. The Trump campaign still credits Facebook with being like a huge influencing factor in their
Facebook
victory.
Facebook does not want that endorsement, I don't think.
But so as it relates to us as consumers, basically, if you're not paying for something on the internet, then you are the product. Like back when it started, AOL and things like that made you pay. There was like a service fee.
Yeah, but I remember my mom would – she would hold that over my head if I was on AOL too long.
Right.
Was like, are you paying the AOL bill?
Right.
I'm like, the fuck?
That yeah. sounds so crazy.
Yeah,
and exactly. then the all AOL of a sudden bill. These great benevolent companies like Facebook and Google came along and were like, hey, use our products for free, guys. The reason they're able to do that is because they use all the in-depth information that they have on you to allow different advertisers and different products to target you.
In a way, it actually eliminates the need for ad agencies in a sense too.
Yeah.
Because they can deal with the company directly rather than asking an ad agency like, hey, what's the best way to talk to young millennials, blah, 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 who are affluent? Now they can, like, you know, Coca-Cola can just be like, yo, Google, I'm trying to talk to these, like, an 18-year-old with $1 million.
Right.
Like, how do I do that?
There are companies and, like, a just vast infrastructure of tech companies that are connecting data from one platform to the other. So you have this giant network of information sort of spider webbing all over the place that kind of forms your profile on the web. And it's also a way other types of companies are getting into it. It's a way telecom companies are basically cashing in. They have a declining subscriber base, but they're able to cash in using data. The world's largest phone operators are doing the same thing, like AT&T and Verizon. They're basically tapping into the data that showers from us every time we're mobile surfing or texting or making phone calls.
So like basically since most people don't have landlines anymore, which is like a huge part of their business, and now just sort of buying their internet service, they're like, okay, let's turn that into a secondary product. Like now we can sell all the data that we've gathered from your browsing.
Right,
essentially.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, cool.
Yeah. Car companies are also doing it just based on the fact that they know where you are. At all times.
Terrible. Jeez.
Yeah. You might notice that every time you install any app on your phone, they ask if they can use your location. And obviously there are some apps where that makes sense, like Yelp, when you're searching for various things around you. But there are some that it doesn't make any sense. And that's because they, you know, want access to that sweet, sweet data.
And with that, let's go to an ad.
But it's invisible. It's invisible marketing that we're not really even that aware of. But like with Facebook likes, people like marketers and Facebook in particular can automatically and accurately predict a bunch of really personal things about you, like sexual orientation, ethnicity, religious and political views, personality traits, intelligence, happiness, your use of addictive substances, whether your parents are still together.
No.
Yes.
Your age and gender.
Off of like the pages that you like or like posts that you like, or they build a profile. It's like, oh, well, this guy likes J. Dilla, like Hillary Clinton, blah, blah, blah. And they can be like, they're building a profile like
that. But it's not the stuff necessarily that you're voluntarily like giving over, like saying, okay, this is my profile. They're not just working with that.
No, I mean, like if you like that Facebook page or whatever,
right?
Based on those
pages. Even when you're not on Facebook, if you go to a page that has a Facebook like button on it, that information is going back to Facebook. Facebook knows fucking everything about you.
It's really advanced too. I remember when I used to see ads at first and it would be like, oh, I was talking about something I wanted to buy, and then that ad would pop up for what I wanted to buy, like on the side. But now I feel like it's getting just even more specific. It's like, are you looking for like a 32-year-old black man with a beard that'll text you back? I'm like, oh my God.
And you're like,
I get the same ad.
And I am, and I click on it.
And then what do I get? It's like QuickBooks. No. But you got me to click.
He's only in books.
Right. There was actually a woman who was a sex worker who I think ProPublica did a profile of, because these anonymous clients that she had like no online interaction with, no interaction with other than her professional interactions with them, started suddenly popping up as like people you may know. And she was like, what the fuck, man?
Jesus.
Yeah. So there's this huge depersonalized system that's emerged and kind of treats bits of us and like our information, our personality as like little commodities. And our data is way more valuable than just, you know, the few dollars a month.
Because it's basically like the greatest focus group data you could ever have. It's like you get all of your consumer information from that. And yeah, we don't realize like that's pretty much that's all in like the terms of use of anything when you're like agree to do it. It's like,
and I've,
it's in there.
Whenever people talk about that, they're like, yeah, just click the user agreement and like whatever. I don't read it. And it's almost like we're being self-reproachful, like, oh, like we're lazy. But it's not our fault. The Amazon Kindle's terms of use took 9 hours to read.
I remember that's like a Reddit video.
Took 9 hours. So they're specifically designed for you not to be able to read them.
Right.
So
I know the same thing happens too with a lot of people when you can just search someone's name and you'll be on like one of those like white pages websites where you can find like old addresses and things like that. And people are like, how do they get that? A lot of those websites are getting them from places like Google and things because that's another way your information is just out there. Not even like your consuming habits, but just your personal information that they're even packaging and selling.
So I want to move on to Russia because we know that Russia has been using Facebook to advertise. They've been using all the different platforms that they can to advertise to different people to, you know, promote the behaviors they want promoted and suppress the behaviors they don't want. I think there's specific instances of them suppressing African-American voter turnout. And, you know, Facebook has copped to that now, although Mark Zuckerberg at first was like, the idea that we would have any effect on people's behavior is ridiculous. Now continue to pay me billions of dollars for advertising. So I want to just give a brief history of how Russia fucks with us.
Because this is nothing new.
This is Russia has been fucking with us and more than I think most people realize for a long time. An example that I didn't realize was the Kennedy assassination and conspiracy theories about the Kennedy assassination. I visited Dealey Plaza, which is where the Kennedy assassination happened, with my dad when I was a kid. And, you know, there are all these, you know, booths and like little museums set up around there. And, you know, they have the conspiracy theories there. And like one of the things I saw was a note supposedly from the CIA to Lee Harvey Oswald, like a week before the JFK assassination. I was like, well, that doesn't look good for
what
the
does
CIA.
The note say? It's like, kill JFK.
No, it was just like showing that there was interaction between
them.
Get
the magic bullet.
Right. That note was actually forged by the KGB. And wow. even before the first book on the Kennedy assassination came out, even before the Warren Report came out, a KGB-subsidized publishing house released books such as Oswald, Assassin, or Fall Guy.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, there was a guy from the CIA who was working with the KGB, and he was publishing a newsletter that included claims that the CIA was behind the assassination. Yeah, they distributed that forged letter between Oswald and the CIA that I then saw 20 years later, and that like put the seed in my mind, like, huh? Yeah,
right. Was this an inside job?
Right. Exactly.
And so that's Kremlin fuckery,
right,
from the 60s.
Right. And presumably they also built the android we know as Oliver Stone. Other.
It's a deep joke for people not familiar with Oliver Stone or JFK movie.
Right.
Wait, in that movie, are they pushing that myth in that movie?
Well, they just like push every myth in that movie.
Right.
Something happened here.
Right. Okay. Gotcha.
So, and we can get into what actually happened in the JFK assassination another day.
Because I know you got some hot takes on that.
It was a Secret Service agent accidentally fired the kill shot, but we'll get to that another time. The KGB also distributed racist pamphlets against, quote, black mongrels, and falsely attributed them to the Jewish Defense League. They sent letters to black organizations with bogus details about how the Jewish Defense League was like being violent against black people. And then in 1983, there was a thing called Operation Infection, where the KGB planted a story, supposedly, and they printed this in an Indian journal, like a journal in India, but it like started this rumor that the AIDS virus was genetically engineered by the U.S. government.
But that's true, though.
Yeah, we believe that.
Yeah. Kanye said it.
Come on now. That's still around now. Yeah, in the Kanye song, Heard Him Say. Do we have a clip of that?
Before you ask me to go get a job today, can I at least get a raise on the minimum wage? And I know the government administers the AIDS. So
yep.
I guess we just pray like the minister say.
Right.
Thank you, Kanye.
So that was a 1983 KGB operation that comes down to us. Like,
so Kanye got by the KGB, too.
We all did. Yeah.
I mean, we've all
heard that. And like, whether you heard it and thought it was absurd, you heard it. And
right.
It's in your mind.
Well, it's interesting, too, about the thing during the civil rights movement, too, because the KGB, like, that's another rumor, is that they tried to delegitimize MLK by trying to get people to say that he was taking government money to do this and delegitimize him.
Right.
But that's interesting because he was attacked by the FBI and the KGB. So that's a twofer for MLK.
I know. That's relevant history to then bring you up to the present day where Putin, former KGB agent, is trying to influence the American people and influence the American election. And he has access to this giant universe of information that we give these companies access to. And yeah, I don't know. It's not even like it's not the least bit surprising to me that he was able to kind of influence things and get things done.
Yeah, because I mean, again, these algorithms have become so sophisticated that you can just plug and play all kinds of things and just instantly disseminate that information to a specific group, and knowing that you're getting the most effective message to the audience that is the most receptive to it.
Right.
like even picking up on individual words, like now people use the congratulations to try to boost their posts. Because if you write congratulations in the comments under a Facebook post, it automatically boosts it for longer than any other post because Facebook assumes it's like a announcement that people would want to see.
Hmm.
So if you like, if you write, get on Facebook and write congratulations in a comment and it'll turn orange and then it'll post.
So it's like, hey, I'm doing my 90s DJ set at the bar later. Congratulations. And you're like, man, I don't want to see this shit. We know you're a DJ. Thank you.
Yeah, if you do that. And people were using that to try to disseminate information about registering for the Affordable Care Act since the government slashed so much of the funding for advertisements for that.
Oh, that activist to help people get to enroll were having to game Facebook too by using congratulations hack.
Congratulations, you're fucked.
Yeah.
How to get unfucked. But yeah, so I mean, a lot of the times this is being used by advertising. There's a piece in the New York Times today about how Toyota just released like four different types of ads, like racially targeted ads for the Toyota. I forget which car it is.
It's the Camry.
The Camry.
The one, the black and Asian ones both spoke to me.
Right.
The Asian one what portrayed a very bizarre father-daughter relationship in which I guess he showed affection by looking at her in the rearview mirror.
Right.
Okay.
And the marketing team behind it, I think, was quoted in the piece being like, yes, we know that Asian fathers do not show affection. So we were trying to like break down some doors. But anyways, it's like these are things that advertisers have been working on and, you know, using for years and are going to continue to use and brag about using. And the connecting of that enormous apparatus and like crazy amount of value that brings to advertisers, connecting that to government influences is going to be pretty powerful and could be pretty terrifying.
Well, yeah, it's something that's used to market, like, you know, marketing is all about catching people at the right time, at the right place, in the right mental state to make them, you know, buy your thing. That can be used for such dark, evil shit. And even like on YouTube, I know like with ads too, they can like almost target emotions as well.
Right.
So it's like, oh, like you want to put your YouTube video up when someone's feeling good or happy or excited or and like thrilled about a video. Like these are a group of videos that work for that. Someone who is like maybe not feeling good about the way they look, or maybe feeling sad. They even have ways to begin targeting emotions too in front of the videos or after the videos you're watching. So,
and these are just age-old tactics,
right?
I have a marketing degree. And
oh, okay,
like,
cool.
I have a marketing degree, guys. Little known fact. No, but that's always been something that we would study in school. Was basically like, if you are up at a certain hour, like if late night television is targeted to people who tend to be, they drink heavier, they tend to be depressed, they tend to also be overweight. So you'll see like those commercials target those specific aspects of that personality. So all it is now those same marketing strategies are bleeding over into social media. The problem is that social media has bled so deeply into our personal lives that it's not like television.
Right.
Where we turn it on and off, it's like everywhere, every minute. So that just makes it that much more invasive.
Yeah. It's increasingly important to think about your attention as a finite resource.
Right.
And I mean, we're giving away something that has, you know, actual tangible value, you know, value in our lives, obviously, but, you know, value to these companies. And then it's being sold to hostile foreign powers when Facebook acts like it's crazy that anybody would think that they've had an influence on the election. Like, realize how much of your attention is being spent
on like Facebook.
Right. Is being like,
and for free.
Right. Right.
At least at stores, when they give you those little value cards, like you get like an incentive, like a discount when you swipe it and they get information about your purchases. But Facebook,
No. And it just shows, just to show you how entrenched people, like how Facebook is so important to people's lives. People were calling 911 when Facebook went down the other day. Like,
right. I will say that Facebook does also, like, there's a reason people, you know, are all flocking to Facebook. It also provides a service to people.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. But I think that's where that fine line is, where like it allows us to connect to each other and it is a way to communicate outside of the traditional ways of using phones and things like that. But yeah, it's a very sharp double-edged sword.
And I think we have to head to a break. Obviously, there are a bunch of big questions, like how do you police this big of a system? You know, should the government get involved? Will they end up breaking up these giant companies that, like they did the monopolies in the early 20th century? Those are all interesting questions that we'll dive into at a later date. But for right now, let's hear a couple words from our sponsors. And we're back. All right, you guys. So briefly yesterday we mentioned the stunning lack of empathy required for you to claim that you only feel sorry for sexual abuse victims because you have a daughter. And two of the people who have used this gambit are writing partners and scared to admit it, soulmates, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, have both used it. Matt Damon's was really weird, actually. He said, look, even before I was famous, I didn't abide this kind of behavior, which is so strange. Like, is he saying that, like, most not famous people are fine with sexual assault, and but he wasn't?
I think he's saying that before it was so easy to get away with sexual assault, he wasn't even attempting it back in the days when he was a normie, let alone when now he's famous and he could probably just silence people.
Even before I was a star, I didn't like rape. but now as a father of four daughters, this
really
is the kind of
like
sexual
it.
Predation that keeps me up at night. So
he's saying that before he was famous,
he wasn't raping nobody.
That he didn't. So to say that when once you become famous,
you should, right. you gotta really
then,
get in.
Then you gotta get with the game and be like, hey, it's okay. It raises more questions.
Okay, guys, even before I was famous. Anyways, Lacey, you pointed out that Matt Damon has kind of been problematic for a while.
Oh, for sure. And that's why I wasn't surprised when these comments came out. And as I'm sure many people who are woke to Matt Damon being dead, because he's not asleep, he's dead. he made some very problematic comments when he was doing Project Greenlight with HBO, where he was literally shutting down a black woman while she was trying to talk to basically make the statement that diversity only matters in front of the camera, and where she was concerned that a person of color should be directing a movie where a woman of color would have been a prostitute and beat up by a white man as a pimp, just trying to make sure that the narrative didn't get problematic. He was saying that it did not matter who the director was, insinuating the director should be white, because that doesn't matter in
diversity.
Yeah, he
was like, it should be based off merit.
Yeah.
Or like,
which is another problematic thing that racists like to throw in there, like when they talk about affirmative action and things like that.
Yeah, or even like casting women. It's like, well, we would cast women, but men happen to be funnier. So, you know.
Men are better.
Right. Like, yeah.
So it's just, he's not
and
a
he,
good
like,
guy.
He like gets real exasperated and shit.
Yeah. That whole scene is super cringy. You should YouTube that, anybody. Yeah. Just do Matt Damon Greenlight, Project Greenlight Diversity, because it, all of a sudden, all the other like, I guess are they technically the judges of the show who are also the other producers?
Felt
they
silent.
All like lock arms and are like, "Whoa, no! Hey! No ignorant shit going on here. Now we're just saying, you know, the best director should get the part, get the job."
Lacey, you were pointing out earlier that Insecure, like because it's actually made by black people and with black people in front of the camera, that like it created all these like new ideas that like hadn't been made before
absolutely. I mean, in terms of filmmaking too, I think people forget that diversity and racial inclusion spans so deep, to the point where Kodak, for a very long period of time, up until probably recent years, did not have stock light swatches for people of color. So basically, like, their When you're filming things, there'll be like swatches, like gobos or things that go over the camera that change the lighting, tint the lighting. And they'll have those with an example of like a white person of every shade so that you could see what that white person would look like. But there were no black people. So The Mic actually did an article about how the lighting on Insecure is revolutionary, because before that, most programming wasn't catering to dark skin,
right,
when they were lighting it at all. So that black people never kind of look right in anything,
right,
because they adjust to white people.
What's funny is my dad, who is a photographer, he would always say, like, whenever, you know, so he shot a lot of like black artists, comedians, actors, for magazines, things like that. And he was always critical when he would see photography of black people, because there were many white photographers who just did not know how to light for a black subject in front of the camera.
That's crazy.
And that's interesting to know that's almost maybe innately built out of Kodak, not even like creating these sort of products to help people understand, like, okay, what do you do when the subject in front of your camera has a skin tone that would absorb more light than it would reflect light, and how you actually adjust for this. So,
right. And I do want to just correct myself before we move too far. Shirley cards is what Kodak's, the frame that I was talking about, what they reference to use for lighting.
Gotcha.
They're called Shirley cards, because someone who's into film will know that and drag me.
Mm.
Shirley, you can't be cards.
Nice. Good airplane reference.
Thank you.
And I think that's all the time we have, you guys.
Leave them on a laugh.
Lacey, thank you so much for joining us. This was so fun. Where can people find you and follow you?
Oh, you can follow me at Diva Lacey on Instagram. It's Lacey with an I. Just an I, no E or Y. And then you can also see me on Herald Night if you're in LA. I'm at the UCB Theater every week.
What's your Herald group?
Leroy. Also with Edgar Montplessier.
Yeah.
Yes.
Our first guest. And our last guest of this season one. This is the finale of season one.
This is.
We'll be back with season two on Monday. We only take off a weekend.
Between seasons.
Between seasons.
Yeah, so season two coming Monday. Miles, where can people find you?
You can find me at Big Five Sporting Goods. I'm taking back a faulty sleeping bag, trying to get my money back.
And you can follow me at Jack_O'Brien on Twitter. You can follow the Daily Zeitgeist at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter, at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We are working on bringing those footnotes to you folks. We will get those going hopefully next week in season two.
Yep.
Season two coming at you. And that'll do it for week one of the Daily Zeitgeist. Over and out. What's your sign-off line, Miles?
I got a new one. Latrix.
Nice.